Welcome to Habitual Excellence, presented by Value Capture. This podcast and our firm is all about helping you and your organization achieve habitual excellence via one unifying focus, one value-based structure, and one performance system. In other words, it's about helping you capture dramatically more value through achieving perfect care and perfect safety for patients and staff. To learn more about Value Capture and our services, visit www.valuecapturellc.com.
All right, listeners. Hello, I'm Ken Siegel. I'm the CEO of Value Capture, and we are very privileged to have a unique and special guest today, the Honorable Ed Gainey, who is the 64th mayor of the great city of Pittsburgh. 61st. Yep, 61st. And Mayor Gainey, welcome to Habitual Excellence, and thank you so much for being willing to share your journey as a leader, leading with these ideas and accomplishing some remarkable things.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
We're excited to have you. You know, most of our guests are healthcare leaders. Yet every one of those healthcare leaders and all of the people listening to this podcast who are leaders themselves know that health and safety really are much more impacted by things that happen outside the healthcare system than inside the healthcare system. Sure. And you have taken the same principles of habitual excellence, of breakthrough leadership, and you are making a difference, you and your team, and how you're inspiring the city of Pittsburgh, the people of the city of Pittsburgh, to move on some crucial things. I wonder if you could just share a little bit of this habitual excellence framework, and then we'll talk about how you get started.
Yeah, you know, I grew up in the eastern part of Pittsburgh. Went to Holy Rosary for 4th to 8th grade, Central Catholic, 9th and 10th. Graduated from Peabody High School. Went to Morgan State University, came home, got into politics. Community development led into politics. From there, I worked for two mayors, ran for state representative, and eventually ran for mayor and was fortunate enough to win. And, you know, during the course of my running for mayor, Lisa Frank kept saying, I want you to meet a guy named Jeff. You always talk about leadership. He's always talking about leadership. And I said, okay. And we had a conversation. One of my teachers when it comes to leadership is a gentleman named John Maxwell. Mm-hmm. And John Maxwell has been a phenomenal teacher, never met him personally, but I've read a lot of his books, listened to a lot of his podcasts and things of that sort. So he's one of my immediate teachers. But then, you know, this concept of habitual excellence, mm-hmm. you know, I started to take to it. And I was curious at the time, Jeff, about exactly how do you teach it? You know, it's not, for me, the greatest leader is the greatest student. And I always need to have teachers around me if I want to be as great as I want to be. Not as great as anybody else, as great as I want to be. And so I was intrigued by this. So the first time we went over there and he brought out these Legos. And I said, what is this? Legos. Come on, I'm ready to study. You know what I mean? I'm studying. So it taught me something. Legos taught me something. First thing it taught me is that my impatience wouldn't let me see the ending, right? Because when you start the Legos process, it looks easy.
Yeah.
So you get it done. You got to make sure the outcome is there. Make sure the numbers match up. Make sure that, you know, you're not taking a loss on your balance sheet the whole nine. And I was taking a major loss.
Yeah.
Because we wasn't working as a team.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in learning that, we wasn't thinking about what is the best way to improve a system.
Aha. Uh-huh.
You see what I mean? Mm-hmm. We were looking at, do we need to add more people? Or what is this person doing wrong? And so it was more or less about looking at people and not the system. At the end of Legos, what you learn is that you don't know what you need until the system has been improved.
So picking back up, Mayor, you're already demonstrating, you know, the power of humble leadership and systems thinking. And let me just set a little context for listeners. So you mentioned Lisa. Lisa Frank is the chief operating officer of the city and influential leader as part of your team. And Jeff Webster is the leader of Pittsburgh Futures, a sister organization that is taking the habitual excellence framework that we share with Value Capture and working with you, the mayor, and others to help everyone in an entire region thrive and reach their full potential. So, and by alluding to Legos, you're alluding to an exercise that many people who have done lean or systems thinking will recognize as taking a very broken assembly line and having to use a principle-based approach as a leader to make it better. So you were hooked.
Assembly line, right? It was I was only looking at it from a people perspective, not from a system perspective.
Yeah.
And so whether it was the assembly line, whether it was DPW, Department of Public Works, and their line, whatever line we talk about, the police line, the violence learning line, the sidewalk line, whatever we were looking at, what it helped me to understand is that I can't ask people to do things if the system is not producing the outcome that I needed to produce.
Right.
And so for me, that's what Legos taught me. So, you know, everybody takes their own knowledge away from something. My knowledge was built on the fact that I look at systems now and I think.
Yeah, which is such a powerful change and a lens, right? And allows transformational change to happen.
Yeah. But there was another concept too, though.
Yeah, please.
So we went to Durham, North Carolina. And had everything that happened at Durham, and there was a lot that was there. There was a gentleman that talked about his pancake breakfast in the morning.
Right. Yeah.
What are you studying in the morning?
Yeah.
That gets you to that outcome.
Yeah.
And every day he would study this every single day. And then he talked about meeting with frontline workers and the ability to not only meet with them, but also role play in their position to have a better understanding of what it is they were going through. Was a powerful narrative, because not only were you having your breakfast that you eat every day that I have over there that I eat every day, it was also preparing me for, it also prepares me for if I'm going to talk about the violence line like I did today. Well, I've already studied exactly where we're at, so I understand what I have to do when I get there. I don't have to wait. I'm already prepared before I get there. So yes, I want to hear from them, but some of it is, how do I control the tempo? I can't ask nobody to get details in their brain if the tempo's out of control. When we control the tempo, people learn better because they're more engaged. So you can't let the tempo escape you. So me doing my breakfast, my pancake breakfast, gives me the ability to be able to visualize how I want to enter the room, what I want to say, how we should start this topic. Because when I control the tempo, everybody learns the details.
Mayor Ganey, this is sort of a master class already on how a leader thinks systemically, and you have your own sort of standard way you start thinking. And again, to provide a little context for listeners, you referred to Durham, and that was our CEO learning experience. And you came down and learned at Duke Health, among all things, from healthcare leaders and leaders in industry and leaders in education and the Centers for Disease Control. And you seem like a leader who's able to see principles that can apply no matter what sector or industry you're in.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Which is your question? I think that one, you start with position. For me, I start with position. You know, every time you get a new position, you have to learn that position, not by the title, but by the work. A lot of people get a title, but their title doesn't encompass the work. They're just happy to wear a title. For me, it was different. I've always used my title to increase my work.
Yeah.
You know, then I need permission. I think the greatest leaders have always had permission from their employees to lead. I think that when you have to force yourself, when you have to force yourself on your employees, then you kill morale. And I've seen a lot of leaders crush morale because they let out of fear and not out of humility. And so you want permission from your employees to lead. And then production, there has to be production. And that's where systems come into play. Because if you're in a new position, I mean, the old person wasn't doing the right job in regards to how outcome and production is happening. So you want to examine your system. So we examine the police system. We examine the sidewalk system. We examine the Department of Public Works system, the violent lab system, the violent line system. We also examine psychological safety right here on this floor to make people feel comfortable about being able to speak. We turn the fifth floor into a learning lab because all that has production and outcome. Once you get to production and outcome, people take credit in their work, right? They work for the city, but they also see themselves building. So I always tell people, if you're not challenged in your skill set, then you're not ready for a new position, because every new position should challenge your skill set by increasing your work, to increase your knowledge, to change the system that will give you a better productivity and outcome based on how you see you can deliver goods and services to the city of Pittsburgh, in my opinion.
I hesitate to say anything because there's not a word I can say to improve it, but people, I think, are hearing that connection with everyone every day, and they have to own it and want to lead it. It's not about everything you do or commands, but, you know, and that's starting to happen. So let's go maybe a little bit deeper into some of these examples and the results they're starting to produce. So I got to look at your data, and it looks like I know that last year was the safest year on record ever for the city workforce, and you're down on injuries hurting people over about 32%, and then DPW, Department of Public Works, is down an astonishing 58% from when you started. Is that right?
Yes.
So do you want to talk about that work a little bit?
I think coming in, I believe sometimes, I always say things can be created or they can be made. This was made for us coming in from off of a pandemic. We had the opportunity to change a lot of things. So, you know, working with Jeff, talking about getting more closer to the frontline workers, actually going out in the first snowstorm with all my lieutenants, Jake Wheatley, Jake Pilot. We went out and got into the snow trucks.
You observed together
The front line. Exactly. One, the equipment that they were going to need. Did we have enough personnel in the streets to be able to remove the snow? And what we found out is that sometimes we only had one person, one truck, and one neighbor, which was just inefficient, but we had 21% of our personnel off. We had to figure out why. Come to find out that they weren't off. I mean, they were off because the morale was so low, they just didn't want to come to work. And then we also had to talk about how do we re-examine how we do streets. You know, like every neighborhood can't have the same amount of personnel, you know, based on being equitable across the city, because we weren't being. You know, where you have more hills, you have to think about how you deal with more hills. If I wouldn't have got up on that truck and we stayed there for like 3-4 hours, I wouldn't have been able to find out. That's one. Two is going into the back room and seeing how is the back room set up in regards to if I need something. One, how long do I have to wait to receive it? Two, is it set up to where we have an accounting of what products is where, how many products we have, what products run out fast? Because if the back room is not set up, the front room can't move.
Yeah.
So we got better at being able to do that. Then we created the help chain. The help chain said, if there's a problem within 24 hours, we want to be able to ensure that the top lieutenants know and that we have some type of examination of what the root cause was, look at the root cause, examine it, and find out what is the solutions, not what is the answer. What are the solutions that can make this better and keep our people safe? And are we wearing that badge of honor every day to say the safety comes first? Because part of transformational change is your ability to communicate that message that you want people changed, you want people safe. So as you can see, we start putting things up safe, welcoming, and thriving. That's what we want people to focus on. So when you see the reduction in, you know, the reduction of our employees being injured, that's because we put a serious look on safety, and we got the big thing. we also got the directors to buy.
Mm.
Right? So now the directors is believing in it.
Yeah.
You know, because if you don't, you can add a frontline worker, but if that director is not buying into it, you're still going to have a clogged drain.
Yeah.
So when we got the directors to buy into it, now they send it up to my lieutenants. My lieutenants take a look at it. They send it back down, or we go visit. It started to show the employees, somebody cares.
Right.
Somebody cares. And so part of production is caring, you know, because it can't just be about the product. It has to be about that person, because that's how you get the best out of that person. And so those are the things that we did in DPW that resulted in the 58% decrease in people getting injured, because people started taking it serious of how they deal with the daily equipment and how they deal with themselves.
So much you're tying together, the vision, the clarity of the vision,
every day,
creating the system around it, modeling the system every day. Real-time safety, showing people that it's real, all of that.
But you got to do it every day.
Honoring the work. And,
you know,
and
that's the key. You got to do it every day.
How do you do it every day, Mayor?
Because you have to get up with a mindset that your mindset has to be focused on, how do I create a city that's inclusive?
Hmm.
How do I create a city for all?
Hmm.
Well, I can't create a city for all if my workforce don't feel like they're included in how we run this city.
Yeah.
You know, and I could take you to DPW and I could show you that we don't have a problem with call-offs anymore. We don't have that problem. We don't have a problem with people not wanting to come to work anymore. We don't have a problem with people giving 110% energy. And that comes from making people feel that their work is valued, because it is. DPW is probably, the reality is my favorite department, because they're my real front line.
Yeah.
If the streets got potholes, are not paved, snow covered, if the streets are not good, the city can't move. And so there, no disrespect to my public safety departments, Department of Public Works is number one, because without them, nothing moves.
And all the leaders who lead with systems thinking listening to this are coming out of their chairs because they hear you articulating the truth and the results that they know too. It's more than just safety or the thing you're focused on. The right things start to happen in multiple ways, right? If you show people you care and you create the systems to support them, all of a sudden they're not calling off on this kind of thing. So you started with the workers of the city itself, and you're getting dramatic results. And of course, you were trying to spread the same way to think out to what they were working on. So talk about sidewalk walkability, talk about the violence learning line, talk a little bit about what's now, you know, really affecting that broader vision of the community.
So the sidewalk walkability was major, because we had a lot of broken sidewalks. The mobility was bad. We didn't have curb cuts the way that we thought we should have it. And then it was challenging because we knew going in that a great percentage of this city is below poverty.
Yeah.
We don't have a lot of middle-class neighbors in the city. And so you can see the difference in sidewalks based on what neighborhoods you go into.
Yeah.
The reality is we don't own all the sidewalks. Some of the sidewalks are owned by people, so we had to split it up into two groups. One is the ones that we own. We had the ability to go on there and make sure we improved those sidewalks. The second one was going to be a little bit more difficult, because it comes to communication and education of how we get homeowners a discount to help them repair their sidewalks, and if they would see the interest in doing it, right? Because some of them have said, my sidewalk has been out for 10 years. I'm used to seeing it that way.
Yeah,
I'm used to seeing my neighbor's sidewalk that way. So even though I know it's there, I no longer visualize the problem because it's become part of my daily life.
Right.
And what we've had to demonstrate to them was that it doesn't have to be. And we want to help you. And so in helping you, we create a tier program, put you into this tier program, and we want to show you, and I promise you, that you're going to feel better about your problem.
One of the things as an observer that's been most impressive to me is you use the same systems thinking to attack this. There were all these bureaucratic things and one department not talking to another that were in the way, or potential attitudes. And you all just use systems thinking and rapid experiments to sort of figure that all out.
Well, institutions are siloed.
Yeah.
And in government, we've been siloed for a long time. This is my part of government, and that's all I'm concerned with. What we tried to do was remove the invisible wall, because we all have to work together. And so even in my department meetings, when I'm meeting with my department directors, we're meeting to talk about how we work together. I want to hear how Parks and Rec work with DPW.
Yeah.
I want to hear how Domi work with neighborhood needs. I want to hear how you opened up your walls and worked together. And so when we're in our director meetings, it's all about how we work together. It's about how so-and-so is talking to so-and-so that never talked before, but now they feel that they're valued enough to be able to go down there and have a real live conversation. We've had people come and say, okay, we're waiting for the shoe to fall, because we've always been punished from the mistakes that we made. My strategy is that fall fast. If you're not making mistakes, you're not growing. Mm. You have to experiment in any time you have R&D, research and development. You know this as well as I do, that there's no such word as perfection. There's going to be mistakes. I can deal with learning mistakes, because that's how we learn. If I can get you in a mindset to say that that didn't work. Okay, why didn't it work? What went wrong, and what would you change? Mm. See, once I get you in that mindset, I put you in a learning environment. Mm. So now you don't see the failure as a mistake. You see it as a seed of development. That, yeah, I see where we went wrong. I see the mistake, and I can articulate the mistake. Mm. And I can come up with some solutions on how we can reap. So now when we're in the learning lab, we're talking about solutions. Yeah. If I don't have a mistake, I can't change anything.
Right.
You know, you can't have solutions if there's nothing there. You have to have something there. And so because we have a big gamut called the city, there's a lot of mistakes. I don't need you. I'm more upset if you don't tell me what the mistake was and try to keep it a secret.
Yeah.
And tell me what the mistake was and improve on it. And that's how you... That's when you get departments talking to departments, because now they don't see it as this is just mine.
Yeah.
They see it as it's ours. And that's the mindset. Mine is, don't come talk to me about it. I'll do what I'll do and I'll pass it on to you. Ours is, how do we work together to create a better product?
So you have, you're applying this, you brought us to another level of leadership, which is crucial, which is the psychological safety that you're creating. Okay. And you have some wonderful phrases about this. Am I right that you say that breaking down hierarchy and creating psychological safety is not a microwave meal?
Not a microwave meal. It doesn't happen overnight, but it starts with me.
Yeah.
I do something that my employees feel but may not see. And I'm more interested in if you feel it than you see it, right? So every morning, well, let's just say out of 5 days, I'm guaranteeing 4, that I walk down the hall as the mayor and say, good morning. You good? Good morning. You need anything? Mm. Good morning. You okay? Mm. Because I need them to understand that if I can take 5 to 10 minutes out of my day to check on you, mm-hmm. you mean something to me. Mm-hmm. Because I work for 2 mayors. Mm-hmm. No disrespect to those mayors. I never saw them. They need to see me. You see what I'm saying? Because
I do.
If you may pull me in the office, and I always get pulled in the office, just one or two things. Okay, that's okay. I know what you need now. And if I know what you need, I can deliver that. And it's not that I'm not going to go talk to my lieutenant, so I don't want you to talk to your upline. It's nothing like that. Psychological safety starts with the leader. And if I'm going around checking on you, I don't expect you to have a great day every day. What I expect me to do is let you know that if there's something I can do for you, let me know. If I can lighten the load just a little bit, I'm going to get a better production out of you. Mm. That's psychological safety first. It starts with the leader.
Couldn't add a word. That's so powerful. And you're seeing the accelerating effect across the workforce and the city from it. I know you mentioned violence earlier, and I know our murder rate is down almost 30% and falling faster than the rest of the country. And you're applying the same systems thinking to
same system get and method, right?
And yeah,
as the leader, every time I'm in front of a camera, I'm saying, if you see something, say something. Mm-hmm. I'm pleading with the community to change their mindset about violence just being something that we accept. It doesn't have to be. Life we can accept if we choose to. What do we choose, violence or life? And so going into the Hilltop communities with the Learning Lab, today was one of the bigger meetings we had. Mm-hmm. And this is very challenging because you're asking a community that was developed in poverty, developed in violence, to see life differently. Mm. I'm asking you to change your mindset about how you see life. That is a major challenge. So to take this system, to find out what resources are already there, to find out who's funding who so that you don't have funders using community groups to play on them based on the funding they receive in the room, to have leaders that have watched children grow up and surpass them or go to jail or still in the community, and you're still making the same money that you made 20 years ago, and you're broken and you're hurting. How do we change a mindset using a system of cooperation to get a new form of unity that produces a different level of outcome? Hmm. This is something that I'm very interested in, because if we can change how we utilize funding, if we can change how we create a curriculum of growth, now we're in a situation where 20 years later, you're not in the same position, Brian. 20 years later, if you learned a lot more, and you feel more empowered because you have more knowledge. So now you have a new title, which means you have a new position, which now means that you have more influence, to have permission from your community to lead. And now that you have more wisdom, now you have a better outcome of production than you had 20 years ago. So now you can talk about reproduction of community members, because you've demonstrated that if they go through this curriculum, they can make a life too.
You have just made such powerful connections out beyond the workforce that you lead to the people of the community you are elected to serve, and the same, it's systems thinking, but it's also aspiration to what's different. And it's a huge challenge, right?
It's a,
people
it's a huge
faced
challenge.
With a very different.
Yeah. But if you're looking for perfection.
Yeah.
If you're looking for perfection, I'm just looking for habitual excellence.
Uh-huh. Mayor, say more. What does that mean to you? In our last few minutes here, we know your next meeting's coming up.
To me, what it means to me is something I wish, to be quite honest, that I would have probably understood 30 years, just to be quite honest, that, you know, failure and adversity is not my enemy. I think that the biggest killer of people, the ability not to adapt to adversity and failure, and look at a failure as an end all, that I'm incompetent, that I can't learn. That becomes such a negative in people's life that people quit. Habitual excellence to me debunks that. Mm. It takes my failures and says that I can still succeed. It takes my failures and has me see it differently. I don't see it as a life failure. I see it as something to learn from. I take it as adversity, you know, and my team has faced a lot of adversity coming out of the pandemic. So if my mindset hadn't changed about habitual excellence, we could have never moved this city forward. Mm. So what do I mean by that is that, you know, coming in here, the first things that we talked about as a team is falling in love with adversity. Mm. Because if I can get your mind to fall in love with adversity, we're beginning to creating a learning culture. That is the first step towards habitual excellence. And so once I can open your mind that your failures are not permanent, but only momentarily, now all of a sudden, let's talk about that next step. And that next step is where safety came in. Because now that I got you to understand that your failure of adversity is not permanent, how do we create psychological safety? You see, because now you're out of that, oh, I failed, I can't. Listen, I fail every day. And I'm thankful for it now. Where 30 years ago, it would have fractured me.
Yeah.
But now I'm happy for it. Because that means I've had to motivate. I'm growing. I'm growing. And I want everybody in my team to grow. And you can't grow if you don't have it. There's no growth without adversity. It doesn't exist. You cannot get the habitual excellence if you don't have adversity in your life that helps to sharpen you to get to a level where you believe in you.
Mayor, I can't thank you enough for being willing to be a guest and sharing this very powerful journey. You've inspired me, and I've been around a long time and talked to a lot of leaders, and I'm sure that you've inspired everyone listening to this podcast when they hear a great American leader taking the ideas to make profound changes in the lives of those they serve as a leader, directly and indirectly, in community. And I think you may have demand for other people to come learn from what you're doing here at the City of Pittsburgh, and seeing how the failures and the adversity and embracing it is actually leading to the amazing gains that you're starting to make. So,
no, thank you. I mean, you've embraced us. You know, you didn't have to. You know, you didn't have to invite us to Durham, North Carolina, which I thought was tremendous. So, you know, a lot of it is, again, I was open to learning. I just need the teachers around. So thank you.
Well, and you're teaching us now. So thank you, Mayor. And for listeners, thank you for tuning in to this exciting episode with Mayor Ed Gainey, the 61st mayor of the great city of Pittsburgh, and Peabody Highlander, graduate of Peabody High School, like your interviewer here.
All right.
For those of you who want to learn more about the ideas of habitual excellence, it's easy to get in touch with us. Check out our website at www.valuecapturellc.com. Mayor Gainey, thank you.
Thank you, bud.
Thanks for listening to Habitual Excellence, presented by Value Capture. We hope you'll subscribe to the podcast, and please also rate and review it in your favorite podcast directory or app. To learn more about Value Capture and how we can help your organization on this journey to habitual excellence, visit our website at www.valuecapturellc.com.